Welcome to the Unconquered Podcast.
Lethal simplicity. I like to score fast. It's hard not to be a nose fan. Get Florida State back. I want a damn good defense. We're still undefeated. Blame no one. Make no excuses. Do something.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Unconquered Podcast. This is your host, Jason Staples. Once again, this podcast brought to you by Louis Marquez of Keller Williams Realty in Jacksonville, Florida. Resolution Home Loans throughout the state of Florida, and by Garage Makeovers down in Palm Beach and Broward County. Give you a little bit more info about each of those through the rest of the show. But this is a bit of a belated, a little bit overdue reaction to the spring game where Florida State finally showed a little bit of what fans can look forward to in the Taggart era, and what a difference it was. And I have to say right up front that the staff and the program in general continues to just hit all the right notes. And as I said in the last podcast, when you're a head coach at a major program, you need to be a good politician. And that's something that that Willie Taggart has done really, really well across the board in terms of reaching out to former players, in terms of presenting a positive face of the program for fans to get behind, all sorts of things. And you know, some of you out there may say, well, you know, you don't need to be a good politician if you're Nick Saban. Well, actually, the thing is, Saban is also still a good politician, even though his style is different and he can be difficult and is difficult to work for and can be aggressive at times, or basically can be pretty combative with the media at different points. At the same point, he's always in politician mode and really takes care of things behind the scenes. And again, he's going to steer things in the direction he wants, but he is still a solid politician, just a different kind of politician than what Florida State has gotten in Willie Taggart. And Taggart's style fits really, really well with Florida State's program. If you look at the history with Bobby Bowden and the way that he played the ambassador role as the head coach at Florida State, and just the personality of the program, Taggart gets it. And you could really see that in the way that they ran the spring game, and the way that they connected with fans, all sorts of things. He gets that stuff. And you can see it already reaping rewards in terms of recruiting. I mean, all this stuff goes together because it puts a face on your program. It helps sell that family atmosphere. And again, this is something that early on this show, we talked about some similarities potentially between Taggart and Dabo Swinney from Clemson. And you're seeing a lot of that stuff play out already in terms of the way that they do things, and the way that they play the politician or ambassador role within the program, and the way that they connect with the fans and others in the program, and how they're building that culture, even down to family dinners and some of the things that Taggart has been incorporating, where they've been doing basically players have to be there to eat together three times a week. Clemson's been doing family dinners for years now, and that's one of the things when I've clinicked at Clemson that they talk about as one of the keys, one of the secret sauce ingredients for that atmosphere at Clemson, where players and coaches and families of coaches and players' girlfriends, although, you know, Dabo says you have to be Facebook official in order to bring your girlfriend. You just can't bring any, you know, you don't just bring a girl you've been on a couple dates with. But, you know, if she's effectively part of the family, then bring your family. If you've got kids, if you're a player or a coach, bring your kids. They want that to be the atmosphere that they build at Clemson. That's been very, very important for them, maintaining a consistent and tight-knit culture in that program. And that's something that Taggart is doing at Florida State. And I think that's already reaping dividends. Again, you can see that this team is one of the things that stuck out both in my trip down there and also just watching the spring game more from a distance. You can see that these guys are getting closer as a team. And that's something, again, you've got to give Taggart a lot of credit for in terms of how he's how he's handling discipline and everything else. And some reports about some of that stuff have finally started coming out. I'm not going to be the one to report on exactly how he's been engaging with that. But again, as I've said from the very beginning on the Twitter feed, you don't have to worry as much about the dog that barks a bunch as much as the dog that doesn't bark but has a big bite. And he's been handling things well behind the scenes on that front as well. And again, that's important for the way that things go within the program. Now, as for the game itself, this analysis of the game is going to be brought to you by Resolution Home Loans. Chad and Shannon, they were among the diehard Noles, the 60-plus thousand attending the game, also podcast listeners. Listen, as mortgage originators in the state of Florida, you're not going to find anybody better. They're gonna make sure that if you're a Florida State fan, that you have the best possible service. You're gonna get the direct line, the red phone line to either Chad or Shannon, if you are, and you're not gonna be working with somebody lower on the totem pole. You'll work directly with those guys to make sure that you get the very best possible service and the best possible rates, and that you don't have to worry about any of this stuff as you're going through the buying process. They'll underwrite your loan up front. You don't have to worry about a deal falling through. Listen, they'll guarantee that if you'll close within 15 days of the contract closing date, or they'll give you $500 off your closing costs. They've got that hotline set up for FSU fans, 844-FSU-LOAN. That's specifically set up for FSU fans. Like I said, the red phone, the special phone, the bat phone, to deal with Chad, who's in South Florida, Shannon, who's in Tallahassee. You can also go through fsuhomeloans.com. All that information's in the show notes. Just make sure that you let them know that you heard about them from the Unconquered podcast, and that definitely helps me out a bunch if you do that. And let me know that you're going through them, and I'll throw in a free item of your choice from the Unconquered podcast shop. So back to it. Let's talk about the game. Well, it's a spring game, and it's a spring game with uneven rosters. I mean, the draft didn't come out even at all, and I don't think they intended it to come out even. the thing about these spring games is that they're really for the fans as much as anything else, although they want to get the players out there and put them to the test. And so what they'll do actually is they'll make sure that in the draft, certain guys face more difficult matchups, certain guys that they want to test in certain ways. So, for example, in this game, you got Blackman and Gavin and McKitty on one side with not much help in terms of the rest. I mean, with a worse offensive line against the better defensive line and against three scholarship corners, basically a team that could cover the pass, versus Hockman, who got multiple scholarship wide receivers and faced walk-on cornerbacks and younger defensive tackles with more experienced interior offensive lines. So, that clearly shows that they wanted to put the older guys a little bit more to the test in terms of matching them up against each other on each side of the ball in some of those key spots, and make it a little more difficult on Blackman, for example. And you could see that in the results. That said, I'm very pleased with what I saw from Hockman in terms of how he handled himself in this game. He handled the pressure that he did get well. He was able to throw on the run. He was able to make good decisions. I mean, you can only do what you can do against the competition that's in front of you. And he played well. And those younger scholarship wide receivers played well. I mean, they did what they're supposed to against those walk-on corners. Tamorian Terry is not supposed to be coverable by a walk-on, and he wasn't coverable by those walk-ons. Same thing with DJ Matthews. You know, he should be eaten, and he should be eaten a lot against the guys he was facing, and he did. So good opportunity for a coming out party with those guys. That said, with Blackman, I mean, not only is he going against scholarship corners, I mean, the best corner on the team, actually all three of the best healthy corners on the team, you had Stanford Samuels, Levante Taylor, and Kyle Myers all on the same team there facing Blackman. Not only did he have to face the better pass coverage squad, but he also had to deal with DeMarcus Christmas going up against a walk-on offensive guard most of the day, and then when he wasn't going up against the walk-on, he was going up against the freshman offensive guard, which that wound up being a major mismatch all evening, and made things much more difficult for Blackman, who had pressure in his face, which is way worse than pressure from the side. Pressure from the outside you can deal with as a quarterback. Pressure up the gut is much harder to deal with. He had to deal with that and better pass coverage over the course of the day. And, you know, generally handled it well, didn't make bad decisions, which, again, that's really what you hope for in this sort of thing. But, you know, for these kind of games, again, you're not really trying to, you don't want to overanalyze these. And you know, I've seen already some outlets looking at stats and trying to parse play calling and different things in this spring game. And I'm just going to tell you, I saw one of the more important scrimmages, and what you saw in the spring game was very limited. You know, they showed very little in terms of offensive wrinkles. They put on a show for the fans with some trick plays and throwing it a lot more than they ran. But they showed very little in terms of what they're going to do on both sides of the ball. They kept it very basic to the very vanilla, most base plays in terms of what they've been working on over the course of the spring, on both sides of the ball. That's what they did. Now that said, in terms of scheme, what they did show, I did, as I said, a couple of weeks ago, before my trip down to Tallahassee, they're installing a lot more Baylor influence in what they're doing at Florida State than what Taggart had done at previous stops. Now, this is not exactly the same stuff that they were running at Oregon, say. If you watch that Oregon tape, and then if you watch what they did at USF, what they showed in the spring game and a lot of what they've been doing in terms of splits and some of the other things over the course of the spring is more influenced by that Art Briles type stuff than what Taggart did at USF, and more than what he did at Oregon. There's been more of that. And a lot of that's coming from Walt Bell, who's bringing some of that to the table as well. So, there's more influence there. Now, they threw it more in the spring game, like I said, than they will in actual games in terms of percentages by quite a bit. A lot of that is because of the offensive line that was patchwork on both sides. And, you know, you're not going to be able to run the football in that situation all that well. And so they're not going to waste everybody's time doing that. And also they're not going to make it boring for the fans there. And they're going to put the quarterbacks in position where they can work on stuff that they need to work on right now. And then once they get healthier and they get their offensive lineup healthy in the fall, they'll be able to get back to working on pounding the football a little bit more, which is really what Taggart wants to do. The defensive scheme was also very vanilla. I mean, they played the base press quarters that they've installed. I mean, again, that's the base. But they're going to run a lot more than just that. I mean, that's going to be part of what they run over the course of the season next year. But that's what they've taught as the base defense. But that's not what they're going to be in 90% of the time. I mean, they played a bunch of it in this game. They rotated some to Robber and a couple other things, including one big miss up the seam by Blackman, who had pressure up the middle on that one. But. Overall, the defensive scheme was very vanilla, very little in the way of blitzing, which is they're going to blitz a ton. That's something that we're going to see a lot of actually once they get to the season. But they didn't show any of the exotic stuff that they're going to be bringing in the fall. And I wouldn't either, given what's coming with the Virginia Tech game in that opener. Now, one thing that you can do with spring games is you can talk about traits that you see. You can talk about, you know, what players did in the opportunities that they were given, what positives and negatives basically were there. Now, from the quarterbacks, I've already basically given you my breakdown. I'm going to go position by position really quickly here and talk about some of the players that stood out for one reason or another. But again, I've already given you basically my view on Blackman and Hockman. Blackman was a little bit, you know, there were a few things I'd like to see him clean up, and that was true in the scrimmage that I saw as well. But I still, at this point, figure Blackman's most likely going to be the starter going into the fall. I don't think anything that we saw. I'll just say this in terms of the spring game. I don't know that there's anything that really I saw during the spring game that changed my mind or presented a whole lot of different data on anything, really, given what I'd already been told or what I'd already seen. So, and that was true for the quarterbacks as well. Blackmon, you know, looks like he's still developing, looks like he's getting more comfortable, but they're both quarterbacks are going to have to continue to develop in the system and continue to gain some comfort. It's going to be a lot easier to be comfortable, though, once you have, you know, a little bit of pass protection in the pocket. So this is, you know, you can't just have a jailbreak up the A-gaps every play and throw the football. Now, as for the wide receivers, I think there was a lot to be encouraged by. Obviously, Tamorian Terry was the star of the scrimmage in that regard. And he flashed the athletic tools. I mean, we've talked about it on this podcast. He is the most talented receiver, has been since he signed, the most talented receiver on the roster. You know, and he flashed those athletic tools. I mean, he's 6'4 and runs like a deer. And you know, there's been some discussion. Some people on Twitter were asking, you know, who does he compare to? And you know, who's a fair comp for him? Actually, the first comp that comes to my mind for him is actually Alvin Harper, the old Dallas Cowboys wide receiver from the 90s, who was 6'3 and really bendy and really athletic, was a major vertical threat, would jump up over people, you know, was tormented the league for a few years and then just sort of faded out as his athleticism faded. But Terry actually reminds me something of him in terms of the kind of size, speed, vertical threat, you know, ability to go up and snatch the football kind of combo. But, you know, he really couldn't show anything in terms of what he's improved on or how consistent he is as a player due to the level of competition. I mean, the big plays that he had were when they were in like cover two and the walk-on corner didn't, he basically let him loose. And so he's catching a ball with nobody around him. You know, another big play was where he just ran right by the walk-on. I mean, there's just nothing you can do about that. And that's, you know, that's great, but those are not representative of what you're going to see, say, when he's facing Bud Foster's Virginia Tech defense, which has like legit Division I scholarship corners. That's going to be, you know, NFL prospects at that position. That's going to be a different thing. And I was told he's still pretty inconsistent. He had an inconsistent spring. He'll have big plays and then he'll have some inconsistent things that he's just still got to work on. You know, maybe the most impressive thing he did actually was running down LeBourne to you know, make sure that one of the walk-on corners didn't run LeBourne down on that long run, which the way he ran him down, he walked him down very, very quickly. And LeBourne's not slow. I mean, he's a 4.5 5.40. I mean, he's LeBourne's not a burner. I mean, he's not especially fast. He's actually a lot like Devontae Freeman in that regard. He's not a breakaway guy. And against the first team defense, he's not running away from those corners. But you know, he's a good 4.55, you know, 4.6 area 40. And for Terry to basically run him down like he was standing still was still really, really impressive for a guy that's 6'4". Apparently he hit around 21 miles an hour on the GPS system on that run or while running LeBourne down there, which is awfully fast. So again, flashing that capability. Keith Gavin was another wide receiver, obviously, that I've paid a lot of attention to in this game. He had a much, much tougher assignment. He was going against scholarship corners the entire night and was the focus of the defense in that regard. And particularly Kyle Myers versus Gavin was a war a good bit. I mean, it was, those guys were battling and for the most part, Myers won that matchup. Although again, Gavin had some wins, had a couple wins, particularly early, and was in position to win a couple other cases, but didn't have the ball thrown his way on those. And then he wasn't able to make the adjustment on a couple deep balls, to catch those along the sideline. But Myers plus the pass rush mostly won that matchup. That said, I should mention that Gavin was the best wide receiver on the roster all spring. That's something that the coaching staff has been very clear on behind the scenes. They were very pleased with Gavin over the course of the spring. He had a very good scrimmage that I saw, while the young guys actually struggled more in that scrimmage, for what it's worth. And you know, he I think is still in position to be a solid number one option for this team. Although again, he's not going to be the big play guy, in the same way that Terry and especially Matthews are going to be in this offense. He's going to have to be more of the consistent guy, the consistent steady presence on the outside, and I think he can do that and do that well based on what I saw, not just in this game, but previously. And I'll mention this also, that not only was he up against scholarship receivers, whereas the other guys were scholarship corners, where the other guys weren't. He also, when you're running those vertical routes and you're running them from such wide splits, when you're running them from 2 yards from the sideline, which is, you know, they're plus two splits in many cases. If you're running a vertical route on that, generally speaking, when you coach wide receivers, you tell wide receivers on a vertical route, you need to be no less than 5 yards from the, or no more than 5 yards from the sideline to give the quarterback some room to throw and yourself some room to adjust to the throw when you're running those verticals. If you're already lined up at the plus two from the sideline, you don't really have any way of getting back to that landmark to give yourself some space, and that takes some adjustment. It's harder to have success when you've got a corner draped on you and you're already starting at 2 or 3 yards from the sideline. When the ball's thrown, you only have 2 yards of space to try to catch the ball, get your feet down and all this while the corner's walling you off. That's difficult. And the coaching staff knows that, but this is something that they're going to have to work with these guys on. And over time, you say, well, why then line up that wide? Well, you get some benefits from it too. Over time, you may get more one-on-one matchups. You may be able to run by certain corners a little bit more easily, which then means that you don't have to worry about the amount of space there. You can sometimes get a two-way go and beat a guy inside. There's a number of different options that you can get from playing further out like that. But again, the cases where he was not able to come down with it, those are tough catches because of where he is already on the sideline when that ball's released and when he's going up for the contested catch. So something to keep in mind in terms of a difference between how these guys have had to work in the past. Now, as for other pass catchers, DJ Matthews is, you know, he is who we thought he is. He's going to be a weapon in the slot in this offense. Again, still needs to get a bit more consistent in certain regards, but he took major steps this spring, and I think he, you know, this is one of the things that the staff is they already are basically penciling him in on. If we're behind the sticks and we need a big play, DJ Matthews is probably going to be the guy. Yeah, Gavin is the number one. He's got to be the consistent guy. He's the guy that has been the best guy across the board, but the guy that can dig us out of a jam is going to be DJ because of what he's able to do in the slot and the way that those wide splits benefit the slot. Oftentimes those slots are going to get single coverage from a safety, and that's going to be unfair. Quite honestly, DJ is going to have a pretty good year this year. It's going to be interesting to see how he fits and how Nooney Murray is going to fit once Nooney gets out there, where these guys are going to, what roles these guys are going to carve out. Once that happens, where is Terry going to line up? Where's Gavin going to line up? How are they going to arrange those reps with Matthews being the weapon that he is, and then Nooney being the kind of player, the kind of weapon that he is? How are they going to handle that? Particularly since they're still really basing more in the 11 personnel stuff with Trey McKitty, who had he showed out in terms of his athleticism in that H-back role. In that H-back tight end role. Again, he's going to be a handful for teams and a matchup problem playing in that role in the passing game. That said, if I were to guess today, unless McKitty can, you know, gets a good bit more physical and consistent as a blocker, you might see a little bit more four wide stuff with Terry, Gavin, Matthews, and Nooney at different points, with McKitty still sort of held off when they need to split those guys out, just because McKitty at this point is not quite as good of a blocker as he needs to be. If he develops in that regard over the offseason and in camp, then that means that they'll end up rotating more among those three receivers, and we'll see how that goes. I'm very interested to see what's going to happen. Particularly also, I mean, this is something that that the staff believes that they've got that the doctors figured out the issues with with George Campbell, and that they've fixed that problem, and that they're going to have George Campbell fully healthy in the fall as well. And if they do there, then you got five wide receivers who are really interesting prospects and really good fits for this offense. Campbell in particular, you line him up in that uber wide split with that 6'4 frame and his ability to just run by teams, run by just about any corner. That makes it very interesting. At that point, you might consider moving Gavin inside a little bit more with Campbell on the outside, just to be able to use that speed. Or you put Campbell in the slot and get him matched up with that speed against safeties, depending on how teams are going to cover you. So it gives you a lot of flexibility there. And I'm really curious to see how this is going to go once they actually get into the season. They still are expecting two true freshmen to come in and contribute in some way. I think the primary guy who you can expect to contribute is going to be Harrison, for a number of reasons that we've already talked about on this podcast, but most notably his maturity and his preparation to be able to play early in that regard. I think you'll see him playing more in the slot where you saw Sheffield and all that. You're going to see him as that fourth guy in the slot a little bit more, rotating in with Matthews and with Nooney Murray. I think you'll see Harrison on some of those jet sweeps and other things. And I think you may see him as the backup punt returner, say. And certainly we'll get a look as a kick returner as well due to his speed. Jordan Young would be the other wide receiver of the freshman that I would guess would get the most reps there. I'm still interested to see whether either one has more than, say, 12 to 15 catches by the end of the year. One might. If one does, I would guess Harrison would. I would guess he would wind up with maybe 15 or 20 touches, including jet sweeps and all that. But again, it depends a little bit on how much you blow teams out. Depends on health. But they're going to need a couple freshmen to step in and be able to contribute, at least to take some reps in practice. So it's going to be interesting to see how that all plays out. Now, as for running backs, obviously the star of the scrimmage was Kalon LeBourne. He had the big play, the long run, and the short yardage touchdown. So he had two touchdowns. And, you know, of course, the long run got everybody excited. He also had a couple drives where he was able to get some yardage on several plays in a row, where they were able to run inside zone or run power and run him multiple times. And he was able to find space and move the chains. That said, you know, he and Akers both had the benefit of having the scholarship guards on the inside, which made a pretty big difference. They had more space to run with the scholarship guards against the younger defensive tackles, as opposed to Patrick Blackman and Rasul were facing Christmas and that group against the younger and non-scholarshiped on the inside for those guards. So much harder situation there. But that said, I mean, LeBourne flashed exactly why on this podcast I'd said earlier in the year, in answer to one of the questions that came up on in a mailbag episode, which players could most benefit from the change in system. And my first response on offense was LeBourne. He is a great fit for the scheme, and actually in seeing him actually in the scheme, even more so, because you can really see the lateral burst and his ability to jump cut. I mean, the kid can jump, you know, two yards one direction or another and still maintain speed, and that's a rare gift. His lateral burst, his ability to make himself small and find a hole is elite. Now, he's not as fast as Akers or Rasul. He's not going to be the big play threat against faster defenses, against non-walk-on secondaries. He's not going to be as much of a big play threat in that regard for long plays, but he's a guy that's going to be able to rip off a number of big plays, a lot like, again, Devontae Freeman, because of that ability to get up to speed quickly and to hit the hole quickly and do all of that he showed in this game and also in the scrimmage. That said, he's still very inconsistent as a runner. He still needs to learn to press the hole more. What that means is, as you take the handoff, you have a particular path that you're supposed to keep as a ball carrier to basically try to set up your blocks the right way and make sure that you are getting north-south and at the right time. And he still at times wants to bounce a little bit, wants to dance just a little bit. He's not as much of a dancer as he could be, but there's still a little bit of a desire to bounce, both for him and Akers. You could see that with Akers at times as well in this one. And he needs to be able to get vertical a little bit more at times. But on the long run that he had, and of course that post game interview is one of the all time great post spring game interviews probably ever. he talked about how he saw that wide open hole, and you could see actually, especially on the end zone view of that, you could see him press the hole, jump cut, and hit that vertically with a lot of speed, and that's where he's going to make his plays. And if he keeps doing that and continues to get more consistent at that, it's going to be hard to keep him off the field. That said, again, still a spring game, still showed a lot of inconsistency there overall, showed some inconsistency on that in the scrimmage that I saw. So, you know, don't put too much stock in there yet, especially since Cam Akers is still Cam Akers. Akers is still the best running back on this team, and he still fits what Taggart's going to do really well. Akers is going to get the bulk of the carries unless he gets hurt. Yes, I'm knocking on wood. You know, Jacquez Patrick is Jacquez Patrick. The other guy, though, that I thought was impressive in this scrimmage, particularly on my second watch, was Amir Rasul. He didn't have the benefit of the scholarship guards, didn't have the same amount of space to hit in the running game, but he got vertical. He ran with power, and, you know, he didn't get to flash his speed as much, but he's by far the fastest of the running backs. When he gets in the open field and gets a seam, he's gone. And, you know, he's the true big play threat of that group. And he really flashed some power as well and was able to do, you know, able to convert on some short yardage. I was impressed by what I saw from Rasul. So he's going to be a guy as well that, you know, there's going to be a big fight for those extra carries behind Akers among Patrick, Rasul, and LeBourne. And it's going to be interesting to see how those things get divided up. And it's a good thing they're going to be running more overall plays because they're going to need to distribute that a little bit more in order to keep some guys happy. Now, in terms of the more difficult thing to assess, it's almost impossible to assess offensive line play in a spring game because of the split rosters. But one thing that's, you know, I think very clear, and this was again also true in the scrimmage that I saw, this offensive line just going to need to get healthy and get in shape. You just can't assess when your best players are all in the sideline. Now, I do think that you can conclude from what we have seen that the interior should be fine, particularly as with what they're going to ask him to do. They're going to be fine as they get healthy. They're going to need to be in better shape. But, you know, you get Eberle and Minshew and Bavion Johnson back, and that interior is going to be fine. You know, I think they're going to be fine on that interior. Center guard, they're going to be fine. I like what they've got coming back and what should, once they're healthy there, they're going to be fine. I like that group. The question is, I've got some real concerns about the tackles. I mean, Josh Ball did not look good in the spring game. And that's not about who was around him. It's not about who he was facing. He just didn't look good. You know, Arnold has a chance to be good. He actually looked better than I expected both in both times that I saw him this spring. But he's got to get in way better shape. He's got to drop some weight and get in better shape. Word that I got was Juwan Williams may have been the best tackle on the team before he got hurt, but he's been hurt now since he got on campus, basically. So, you know, what they've got to do is they've got to find the best five, and they've got to find two tackles. Right now, they've, you know, if I were going to pick the best five offensive linemen on the team, it might be five interior guys. And that's great. And, you know, if one guy goes down, you've got some interior guys to replace him, but you got to be able to block the edges. And how exactly they're going to do that, I'm curious. I mean, I'm curious as to what they're going to do in terms of the best five. I mean, once Eberle and Minshew get back, once Bavion Johnson gets back, what do you do? Do you sit Johnson one more year and wait for him, you know, let him sit one more year behind Eberle? Do you try to slide him into one of the guards? And if he slides in at one of the guards, who does he play in place of? Dickerson, Minshew, Kelly? You got four guards. If you're going to put Johnson in at guard, you got four guards that are all pretty high quality guards. And then you've got Kelly. What happens with Derek Kelly? I mean, he's the swing guy. He can play four positions on the offensive line. He's probably best at guard, but you know, do you put him? Do you end up moving him to tackle because you're solid at guard with other guys, and maybe you need to get one of your five best out there at tackle? So, you know, I'm really curious to see what they wind up doing on the offensive line in terms of lineup, and I don't think we have a whole lot of clarity there. I think, you know, if I were going to guess today on what might end up happening, I mean, maybe you wind up with, you know, in an ideal scenario, you end up with something that looks like this going left to right. You know, Juwan Williams at left tackle, he develops and becomes that guy at left tackle. It comes in shape and is able to stay healthy. Dickerson at left guard, Eberle at center, Minshew at right guard, and then Kelly at right tackle. Something like that. I mean, that's totally plausible. But it's totally plausible that you wind up with a group that has three different names than the five that I just named. It's just totally up in the air with offensive line. And they've got a lot of work to do to figure out who that top five is going to be and then get those guys to gel in camp. And they're going to have to get some bodies recomposed and get them into the shape to be able to stay healthy as a group as well. And so they've got a long way to go. And I think that's, you know, that continues to be a concern going into this next season. Now, on the flip side, the defensive line looks to be, you know, a top five group in the country. I mean, even without Marvin Wilson out there, that's an elite group. And for what it's worth, there was just a picture, a before and after picture that was just put up on social media today showing Marvin Wilson having dropped 40 pounds from January to the beginning of April. He was 349 pounds in January, 308 pounds in April. And he's cut his body fat by 7%. Now, I'd said when he was recruited, it all came down to whether or not he would be able to recompose his body. If so, he could be scary good. Listen, if he can continue this progress, at 305 pounds, Marvin Wilson is a scary man as a defensive tackle. That guy can be really, really good. If he's playing at 340, 330, very different. But at 308, 305, that guy's going to be really good. But they're still, even with him off the field, they're still really good at that defensive tackle position. Christmas is a beast. I mean, he's gonna beast out in this system. He's so ideal for this. I talked about it last podcast, so I'm not going to spend too much time on it. But he's going to love this one-gap system, and it's going to make him look good. He's going to make a lot of money in this system. Williams looked, you know, improved. Jones looked good. Wood looked fine in this system. It was the youngsters, Durden and Parks, who really also impressed me there. Now, again, they were on the Christmas squad who, you know, they were going against the youngsters themselves, a walk-on and a true freshman at guard. But just the way their bodies looked and how quick they were off the ball and their ability to move in space, Durden and Parks, the future is very bright at that defensive tackle spot. At defensive end, well, Brian Burns is Brian Burns. Nobody was blocking him out there. J-Rob looked as good as I've seen him. Looked at the best I've seen him look. It looks like he's going to be a solid contributor this year, and they're going to rotate more this year than they have. Looked fine at big end. He's going to be a solid fit there again when they need help there at that big end with some more size when they play more hybrid fronts. I thought Lawson had a little more burst than I thought he would. You know, you add Kando, and this is a really, really good group. I think it's deeper than maybe it would have been expected to be. So I think that's encouraging. The defensive line is going to be one of the top units in the country. It'll be competitive with anybody except for maybe that Clemson group that has four first rounders on it. Four first rounders next year. It's got more than that in terms of once you get into the young guys. The other thing that really stood out, the corners, but this stood out also in the time I was down there. The corners, I've talked about this for years, that the technique in Tallahassee had been poor. Not so anymore. You can see that difference with what Harlan Barnett has brought. They just look so much better in their press man technique. I'll spend a little more time breaking that down at another time, but They just look a lot better in press man. They're playing it more patiently. Their footwork is as it should be. Their hand placement's better. that you're going to see fewer busts from corners, which is really important when you're playing so aggressively. And again, Kyle Myers was the guy that stood out the most because he was going up against against Gavin on some of those verticals and was in good position. Now, he missed an assignment on a when they went middle of the field closed when they had a cover three situation, and you know he missed the vertical there a little bit, but you know they're gonna get used to that. Now as for the safeties, they were okay. You know, Nasir al-Din looked okay. He was better in the scrimmage that I saw, so I'm not too worried. Fagan looked fine. Westbrook looked fine. Woodby, as I've talked about, is an absolute stud, but I don't think Woodby's going to end up playing much safety next year, quite honestly. And that's because the linebackers are a legit concern. Jackson is fine. You know, D-Jax is solid. I think he's going to be a mainstay that won't come off the field all that much. Dontavius Jackson's going to be, you know, probably the leading tackler on this team. He's recomposed. He's bought in. The other middle linebacker, Warner, he's young. He's learning. He's got the tools, but, you know, I think you're not going to want both of those guys on the field at the same time because of some pass coverage, you know, concerns. You want to have a little bit more ability there, more mobility there, more speed. But the thing is, the linebacker position is a bit scary elsewhere. I mean, you didn't have Josh Brown out there. He was out hurt. You didn't have Emmett Rice out there. He was out. Adonis Thomas just doesn't look like the answer to me out there. You know, he's running around blocks a little bit more than I'd like to see. Not as physical as I'd like to see. I mean, you know, just looked like a guy. What I actually think is going to happen is you're going to see two linebackers playing, and I think Woodby is going to be starting at that star position, which is that hybrid linebacker defensive back position, which is what De'Kalon Brooks was playing on one side. I think you're going to see Woodby start at that position as a true freshman. You may see Josh Brown at that position, but I wouldn't be surprised if they slid Josh Brown over to one of the other spots and started Woodby at that star position and basically played a base nickel with a big safety as that third guy. So, you know, basically a hybrid safety linebacker as that third guy with Woodby there. And he would offer them a lot of flexibility defensively to do that. So I think that's what's going to end up happening defensively based on what I've seen, is that Woodby is actually probably going to end up being a starter at maybe even day one at that hybrid position, allowing them to mitigate some of the linebacker issues that they have by using some of the safety depth with one of their big safeties at that spot. That to me makes a lot of sense. He's able to play in the box. He's also able to play outside the box. I think that puts you in the best possible position. So going a little long here, I'm gonna go ahead and start wrapping this up. But before I do, I once again want to thank Luis Marquez for sponsoring this episode. Once again, Luis is a realtor from Jacksonville, Florida, Keller Williams Realty. But he's not just a realtor. He's the best dang photographer and videographer in Jacksonville, specializing in real estate and other types of photography and videography. And again, about 90% of home buyers are gonna search online first. I mean, listen, you're the audience. You know full well how you're going to search for a home. It's imperative then, if you're going to sell a house, that you have the best online marketing plan, that you have the best photos and ideally smooth professional walkthrough video, which is exactly what Lewis is going to provide. If you're going to list your home and you're in the greater Jacksonville area, give Lewis a call. If you're not in the greater Jacksonville area, still give Lewis a call. Find out who you should go with. Let him work with his network in across the country, but especially in the state of Florida. And if you're looking for a place in Jacksonville as well, give him a holler and let him know you heard about him from the Unconquered podcast. All right, well, let's go ahead and wrap it up with some takeaways from the spring game. Again, we'll come back and reevaluate some things and get more in depth with some stuff as the summer goes. But main takeaways: offensive line just needs to get healthy, in shape, and you got to find some tackles. On the offensive side of the ball, I think the tackle position is the biggest question mark. I think the wide receiver position is going to be fine, especially once Nooney gets back. And if Campbell's able to come back and be as healthy as they seem to think internally he's going to be, you're going to have five wide receivers that are going to fit really well, five vets that are going to fit really well in the system. You know, quarterback is going to be a work in progress still is a little bit, but as long as he can, as long as you can protect him a little bit, I think they're going to be fine at that position. It's just a matter of finding comfort in the new system, and I think they're going to do fine there. The defensive line is elite. It's as good as any, probably outside of Clemson. The corners, I'm very excited about. Linebackers are the big concern on the defense. So, you know, offensive tackles and linebackers are the things that I came out of the spring with concerns about. And again, I think would be being an early enrollee and being able to show what he did actually mitigates not any concerns about the secondary. I think they were fine there, but actually mitigates some of the concerns about the linebacker position, because he's actually going to end up playing more in what's effectively a linebacker spot as a true freshman than he will at the safety spot. Now, he may end up moving back later on, or he may not. He may end up sticking at that hybrid spot, which, if I were going to guess, that given his size, that would be my bet. Now, I'm also really interested after the spring to see what happens with Carlos Becker. He's one of the really intriguing guys left on this roster that we didn't see anything from him in the spring because of his injury. But the way that they're wanting to play with the high pressure stuff, you're going to end up with a lot of one-on-one matchups with safeties. And of course, offensively, that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to do that to other teams, where they're going to get one-on-one matchups with slots against safeties. Well, given that, the one thing that they're going to want to try to do is make sure that their safeties can cover one-on-one when they're in that situation, that they're not in a position where they have a, you know, again, Westbrook had a good, you know, he looked good in this game, but you don't want Westbrook one-on-one with, you know, say one of Clemson's top wide receivers in the slot. You just don't. So what do? You end up taking one of your corners and you move him to safety, and you make sure that if you're in a one-on-one situation, that that's the safety that winds up covering in that context as much as possible. And you note that recruiting-wise, they're recruiting a bunch of corners who can also play safety. They've already got three corners committed in the 2019 class, and odds are they're going to sign probably four or five corners in this class. Not all of those guys are going to wind up playing corner at Florida State. A couple of those guys are going to wind up moving to safety, depending on who wins those jobs on the outside. And then those guys are going to be that safety position that they're going to have to be able to come up and support, yes, but they're really covered safeties, and that's what you're going to see. And I think Becker probably fits best out of all the guys on this roster. He's one of the guys that fits best potentially in that spot. And you did see Stanford Samuels move in and do that some in this scrimmage. I wouldn't be surprised to see him in that role some over the course of the year, with Myers and Levante Taylor on the outside. Wouldn't be surprised to see Taylor do some of that. Myers do some of that. I think Taylor stays on the outside. But the guy that I really think ends up doing a lot of that is Becker. And I wouldn't be surprised to see him really contend for a starting role in one of those spots because of his ability to cover. I'm really interested to see what they're going to do with some of those guys on the offensive line. That's one of the big question marks coming out. What's going to happen with Derek Kelly? What's going to happen with Bavion Johnson? Some of the talented guys in there that could potentially play more than one spot. Do you move Kelly outside? Do you move Johnson to guard? If you know, what do you do there? And it's going to be interesting to see how all that ends up panning out. Very interested to see the defensive end rotation once Kando is in the mix. You know, he sat out for the most part in spring. Didn't really get to see how they're going to use him. But you know, they've got a lot of bodies at defensive end. How are they going to use Burns? Are they going to use him a little bit more situationally, or are they going to have Burns on the field with Kando and say Janarius Robinson and move Burns into a stand-up role at linebacker at times? I wouldn't be surprised if they did that some. And then you have only one true linebacker on the field, right? You have Woodby, you have Dontavius Jackson, who's your one true linebacker, and then you have Burns out there who can come off the edge or potentially drop back into pass coverage. Maybe you do some of that. I'm curious to see what they do there. What are they going to do with the bodies that they have there? And again, they're going to try to find ways. They're going to have to try to find ways to scheme around some of the weakness at the linebacker position. Now, Josh Brown, if he gets healthy and is able to claim one of those spots, or maybe, you know, if you get One of the others. I mean, it's possible that Rice, you know, if he gets healthy, could come in and mitigate that a little bit. But without that, they're going to have to find a way to scheme around that linebacker position by using the surplus of talent in some other places to benefit from that. I'm also really interested in seeing how they're going to divvy up carries on that running back position. Again, Akers is going to be the guy that get the bulk of them, but who else is going to be the first off to get additional carries? You know, is it going to be Kalon LeBourne, as you might expect after this game? Is it going to be Jaquez Patrick? Is it going to be even Amir Rasul? I mean, he's going to be in the mix as well. So again, some of the things that he did in the spring game are more impressive if you're watching like a coach than if you're watching like a fan. There's a lot of carries to distribute, but exactly how they get distributed, very interested in that. A lot of questions coming out of spring in that. And then, you know, we'll see how the wide receivers are employed, who plays in what spots and how often. Still a lot of moving parts there. So spring brought up about as many questions as it showed answers. But either way, there's a lot to be excited about looking forward in the program. There's a lot of young talent on this team. They've got to get a few things shored up in recruiting in the 2019 class. But moving forward, this program should be in a very healthy position. It's going to be interesting to see how competitive they're able to be year one against a very, very difficult schedule. But like I said, a lot to be excited about coming out of the spring game. I'll go ahead and wrap it there. Once again, want to thank my third sponsor, that is Garage Makeovers from the Palm Beach and Broward County area. Once again, they've been the top-rated garage remodeling company in South Florida since 2005. Been around since 2005. And again, if you need painting or drywall work, overhead storage, polyaspartic flooring, cabinets, shelving, slot wall, accessories for anything you might have in your garage, if you want to have the garage that the envy of your neighbors, give Nathan a call at Garage Makeovers. All that information is in the show notes. Make sure you do that. Once again, this has been the Unconquered Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Staples. Thanks for listening.
Thank you all very much, and have a great day if you want to.
I made this.